Good morning. Today is September 30th, 2008, and my name is Joe Stigler. I'm a volunteer with OASIS in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and OASIS here is a local partner with the Veterans History Project. And this morning we're in the home of Mr. and Mrs. Schell, Harry Schell, that's spelled S-C-H-E-L-L, and they live in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Harry was in the very famous 82nd Airborne during World War II and served quite a bit of time overseas. So with that very brief introduction, Harry, I'll turn it over to you, and why don't you start with where you were born and went to school and so forth.
Okay, I was born on a farm near Elm Springs, South Dakota, and I went to a country school. We had 35 students, one teacher, and no homework. You studied as the other grades recited, and then I graduated. There was no high school, so that paid my tuition to go to Leeds, South Dakota, and stay with my sister while I went to high school. And that's where I met my wife. And we got graduated in 1940, and we got married in 1941. And
this was before the war started then.
Then I went to work with a Homestake Mining Company in Leeds, South Dakota, mining gold. So if you got any gold in your teeth, I may have mined it. Then in the war, we got married a year before the war broke out.
A month.
A month
before.
And then when the war broke out, the government closed the mine down. They said, we don't need gold. We need lead, zinc, and copper. So we went to Wallace, Idaho. I was out there for about a year, and I got drafted. I come back to Leeds. We had two children. And I got a call from the company I used to work for and said, Harry, come on up and go to work. I says, I can't. I'm in the service. He says, oh, you're not going for 3 months. So he says, come up and go to work, and that way your wife and two children will have free doctor and free hospital while you're gone. So I got drafted and I went into quarter train to Fort Snelling, Minnesota. And that's where I went to. I was supposed to go in the Air Force. When I got in there, they dumped me into the infantry.
Did you want to go into the Air Force?
Yes.
They told me I could go to any service I wanted.
At that time, it was the Army Air Force, so the Air Force was really part of the Army.
Instead, they dumped me in the infantry. Guys with 2 years of pilot training were dumped in there with me. I took 17 weeks of basic infantry. And I said, boy, this is not for me. You crawling in the mud and over the lawn, there's fire machine gun 32 inches above your head. I think my hat still left a mark on that log when I crawled over. And I says, I got to get out of here. And the only way I could get out was join the paratroopers.
And now you were still in basic training at this time?
Yeah. So I went through 17 weeks, and then I joined the paratroopers, and I went to Fort Snelling, Fort Benning, Georgia. And went through 6 weeks of jump training.
Now, did you have any other options besides the paratroopers?
Not to get out of the infantry.
I see.
You either stay in this or go into paratrooper. It's the best thing I done. I was getting $22 a month. My wife was getting $28. Plus $50 for each one of the children. So when I went into paratroopers, I got an extra $50, which I sent to her. And after I finished my 6 weeks training, I went overseas. I caught the Queen Lizzie and went into Southampton, England. And as we've come in, somebody came down with the measles. We got quarantined for a week, so we laid in England for a week. We got on a Liberty ship, went over to France, in the Loire, France. And I got to dry heave on the water.
So on the way over to England?
Yeah, over to France.
Oh, how about on the way over to England?
Oh, that was a big, on a big Queen Elizabeth.
Oh, wow.
So we got on a...
Let's back up to your training in the to be a jumper.
Okay.
What was that like?
Well, the first week was 8 hours of physical training a day. We had 1,000 of them and went in. We finished the 6 weeks, there were 300 of us left. The second week we was got climbed up 32 feet and jumped out to teach you how to land. Because you come down hard and you had to, when your feet, you had to hit the fleshy parts or your great bones. Then the next week was the 132-foot tower. They'd hoist you up on a chute and drop you so you learn how to land.
Was that kind of scary?
No, I hated the 32-foot tower, but that wasn't bad. Then after that, we had to make 6 jumps. First one was 1,200 feet, then they went down. The last one was 600 feet.
Out of an airplane now, mm-hmm. A C-47 probably?
Yeah. And they had a static cord you hooked up, and you come out, and you come out, you took a quarter of a turn and out and ducked your head, because when you pulled your chute, you had 2 brass rings. And shoot over your head, and if you didn't duck your head, it hit you right in the side, back of the helmet. And you hit pretty hard. And I finished that, and then I was loaded into the truck. I mean, went overseas. And over there, you load in the truck and taken up to the front lines of Battle Bulls. And I was assigned to Company D, 508 Parachute Infantry. And I got up there one day. The next day, they pulled that company back. We laid in the woods for 6 months over there. I didn't even know war was going on. And then after the war was over...
When was this? Was this...
This was in 45.
Yeah. 45.
During the winter? Or?
Yeah, he went overseas in January. Yeah.
In January of 45.
Yeah, it was cold over there. It was winter.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we got pulled for honor guard for Eisenhower. And
that's when the war ended.
Yeah, all of his staff and Eisenhower, they'd rotate you around. And these officers, you wouldn't believe, they took 13 room homes away from the German people. And they were living in there. One officer, a cook, housekeeper, and a driver. That was it. And we had to patrol the ground. And you rotate around, and first time I went in to pull the honor guard for Eisenhower, right outside his office, he'd come out and you'd salute him. He'd come up and talk to you. And thank you, and you know, and chat with you. And then when he went back to the States, they brought Patton in. Patton was a great general, but he had a personality that you wouldn't believe.
Did you serve as an honor guard for him also?
Mm-hmm. And I was pulling guard outside his office. He'd come out and salute him. I don't even remember if he saluted back. But he'd say, damn glory boys, and stomp right on by. And the next day I was pulling guard outside the building. And he come out and you salute him and open the car door and shut the car door, and he was dead a half an hour later. He got hit by a truck on the way someplace. And we stayed over and we pulled for officers, and when I pulled the guard, monsters, they took half an hour to just walk around the yard. And when you pulled a midnight shift, I told him I wanted some coffee out there. I said, if you don't put coffee out, I'm going to patrol the outer edge of the yard. I won't patrol the house. You had your choice. I always had coffee. And I'd much sooner patrol the house anyway, because you didn't know what was coming up. And you'd get up the gate, and these little kids would come up and talk to you in English. You'd think you was back in the United States. And one day they got us up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go house to house looking for guns. Give us 5 cans of cold hash. That was supposed to be our lunch. About noon we got into this one place, and this older couple, and they could talk English. I says, "Hey, how'd you like to warm this hash up for me?" He said, "How'd you like to sit down and have a chicken dinner with us?" So we sat down, 2 M1s laying against the table, and had chicken dinner with him. We give him the sea ration, he was glad to get it. He said, "All we've had to eat for 6 months is chicken."
What town was this in? Do you remember?
Kronberg,
Germany.
In Germany, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where the headquarters was for the occupation army.
And this was 1945 still, or 46?
Yeah, you know, war ended in May.
Yeah.
And this was,
yeah.
That's when they became honor guard.
Yeah. I
that's
see.
When
yeah.
Eisenhower.
Now let's back up a little bit. When you went to Europe, you went to Germany?
I went to England,
France.
Then to France, and then to Germany.
And then to Germany.
Yeah.
Did you actually see any, were you involved in any battles?
No, I got up, I was just that lucky. I got up into the front lines, and the company I went in was there that night. Next day they pulled us back with the company I was with, Company D.
I see.
And we laid back in the woods. I didn't even know war was going on.
So you didn't make any jumps or
no,
anything?
No,
I had a jump in France once.
I see.
But then they were scheduled to go. You know, the war was ending, and the Germans were killing the prisoners, rather, you know, the American prisoners,
mm-hmm.
because they were moving back. And so
we were loading to jump the prison camps, and this is, we were about loaded, I got a message, "Unload, Patton's already gone through."
Okay, so you were going to go in and jump near these camps to protect the prisoners.
Get our prisoners out.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And what did you do in France when you jumped there?
Just a practice jump.
I see.
They said we were supposed to jump once a year to keep your flight paid. And they said, "You guys haven't jumped for a long time, sir." And I think they dumped me out at 400 feet. Because I jumped to 600, and they give us an M1, and I'd never jumped with an M1 before. To come out of the door, you had the M1 through your reserve, you'd have it this way, and then get out of the door, you'd have to turn it this way. To get out of the door, then as soon as you made your quarter turn, you'd pull it back, or it'd slap you along the side of the head. And then to land, you want to make sure you had your rifle high enough so the stock wouldn't hit. And I hit the ground before I even got my helmet off my eye. And you got that open shock, no matter how tight you strapped it, it was down over your eye, you push it back. And boy, I hit. And there's a little wind. And I never had a chance because you want to come in frontward. Wind hit me and turned me backwards. There I was going like this before I could get turned over, because you have to get turned over in your stomach to pull, collapse your air.
I see.
To dump it. And the medic come running up and he says, "Are you hurt?" I says, "I don't know. Give me a chance to find out."
Were you ever injured in one of the jumps?
No.
That one?
No.
Your knee was injured?
They killed it. Well, they hit hard, you know, but nothing that I couldn't keep going. But they killed 13 on that jump. The plane lost all the ace and come down and wiped 13 paratroopers out of the sky. So that was a jump that was ridiculous, you know, they didn't need it. And then after that, why they decided they were going to bring the 82nd Airborne home to make a parade down New York Fifth Avenue on Armed Forces Day. So we come in and...
New Year's Day, yeah. 1946.
And we come in to load, and the embarkation, they had the big Queen Mary sitting there for us. Here was guys who had been sitting there for 6 months waiting for a boat to come home. Here they march the 82nd by. Talk about booze and cat whistles, and I was just hoping they wouldn't throw rocks.
Now this was in England that you were
and we got right on to Queen Mary and back in New York.
So you could be in the parade.
Yeah, so we could put the parade.
Well, the 82nd's a pretty famous unit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why they were chosen to be
in
this
in
parade.
The parade. What rank were you then? Were you a sergeant?
I was a big rank. I was a PSC.
I see.
I always had the knack of telling them what I didn't like. The officers don't appreciate that. When I got ready to come home, one officer says, "Harry, if you stay for 6 more weeks, we'll give you a staff sergeant's rating." I says, "You can give me a damn colonel's rating, and I'm not staying." He didn't like my sense of humor.
Tell them about the little children and they had the food. They put the food on the table for the guards in Kronberg.
Where was this?
In Kronberg, when he was pulling the honor guard.
I see.
And they had a big table with food on it, and the guys would come and help themselves, and then they'd throw all that was left in the garbage can, and these little kids would get in there and take it. So Harry one day said, "Why do you have to throw it in the garbage can? Can't you leave it on the table and let the children come and get it?" So they did.
Nice story.
And then we got to New York. We hadn't been paid for a year, which we didn't need money anyway, so they paid us. And my buddy and I says, "We're going to live up. We're going to go to Jack Dempsey's and eat." You know, that's a pretty rich place. So we got in there and ordered and ate, asked for the bill, and he says, "It's already been paid. You couldn't buy a thing in New York, somebody'd pick up your tab."
Mm-hmm.
So
you marched in the New Year's Day's mm-hmm. parade then. Mm-hmm. How long was that? Did you train for that, mm-hmm. or did you?
Well, I took out and walked a certain way. I knew how to march because you were pretty well trained.
Mm-hmm. How long was the parade itself?
Well, it was probably about a half an hour.
With ticker tape and everything like you see in the movies?
Probably, I don't know. So you knew that you were going to make the march, that's all you knew. You never...
It's all you cared.
Yeah. Well, now, during the war, since you didn't get paid for a long time, were you still getting money from the military? So,
oh, yes.
So, and it was enough to provide for you and the kids?
Yeah, because I was fortunate. My sister had to leave because of the mine closed. So she had a house there, and I could live in her house.
I see.
So I didn't have to pay any rent or anything.
Yeah.
The Lord looked out for us.
Yeah.
So then after I got discharged, I come back to Leeds.
Now, when did you get discharged?
Separation in
January.
January 17th, 1946, at Camp McCoy, Wisconsin. I come back to Leeds, went back to work for Hornsteak in the mine, and he worked there, and then I decided my partner was contract mining in the mine. My partner died of silicosis at the age of 46, and my brother-in-law. So I says, "I got to do something else." So I got the GI Bill and went back to school. And I can't remember when I graduated in 51. And then I...
What'd you take in school?
Mining.
He took 3 years of mining, got all the mining courses, and then he went to Spearfish.
And I got a degree in business administration with it. And
finished up with business.
And then
so
I got interviewed by, they said, "With all your mining experience, and with a business degree, you're going to give you the rating of a mining engineer. And so I was always classified as a mining engineer. So I took a job with the government. I got transferred to Duluth, Minnesota. And from Duluth, Minnesota, we got transferred to Dallas, Texas. Dallas, Texas, we got transferred to Washington, D.C. And I had to go out and visit mines in just every state and write some health and safety regulations for the mining, which become law. So if you hear anybody cussing the regulations, why, I was the one that started them. And I don't know what it's like now, they've changed it. But when I was in Washington, D.C., why, I was up to a grade GS-16, and which is a pretty, there's only two more grades, 18.
Yes, that's right.
And I didn't care much for Washington. So at the age of 62, I got a chance to get out. So I retired and come back to Lee, went to Virginia. We stayed in Virginia. And then that place was so busy that we had a son here, so we moved it to Albuquerque, and we've been here ever since.
So that's why you moved to Albuquerque, is you had a son out here. Was he in the service?
Yeah.
Yes.
At Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque?
He retired as a lieutenant colonel.
I see. In the Air Force?
Mm-hmm. He really worked on the space shuttle. He had a degree in physics.
I see.
When I was going to school, a degree in physics was something you took to go to the bathroom. Oh, I hated that course. He had a degree in it.
Let's back up to your service experience a little bit more. What did you do with your time off when you were over in Germany?
Didn't have any time off. You were pulling guard. And when you weren't on guard while you were sleeping, because you pull along, it's like working. You work anywhere from 8 to 10 hour shifts. Come back and eat and get ready for the next day. But you rotate around in a different place each day. But I liked the German people. They were real friendly. And the older people didn't have much use for Hitler, but they didn't have any choice. They either went along or they weren't there. But the French people never did treat us very good. Why, I don't know. But,
now, when you were serving as guard there, were you in dress uniform all the time?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you had to be.
Especially with Eisenhower. And
yeah,
we had
white silk scarves.
White gloves.
We had white parachute silk scarves that we wore.
And your white gloves.
White gloves, and we had leather boots. We didn't have combat boots. They gave us a pair of leather boots.
They had to shine?
Oh, yes. And sometime, I can't remember over there, I went 3 months without a bath. I think it was when they switched me.
When you were back in the woods there.
Yeah. They, stupid me, I packed my leather boots and wore my combat boots. So I wouldn't get them dirty. Somebody stole my bag, my clothes, toothbrush. No, I had nothing. And they had nothing to give me. So we laid back there in the woods. Never brushed my teeth, never changed clothes. And I wasn't the only one. We must be getting pretty skanky. Because pretty soon they set up a shower out here and they put us in a truck, haul us over, run us through the shower, clothes and all. I never did get any change of clothes until I was ready to come home.
Is that right?
But Dennis can't believe me now because I still got my teeth. He says, I am surprised you got any teeth. But the best thing I did was join a paratrooper because I think that, because everybody that I went through basic infantry with that I knew, was in touch with, got killed during the Battle of the Bulge. And I just, good Lord took care of me.
Were these friends that you had made in basic training, or yeah. or that you knew before you went into the service?
No, made in basic training.
I see.
Or friends that, that didn't go the paratroopers, yeah. you know, that stayed in the
yeah. yeah.
And then when I got into paratrooper training over there, there was a guy from North Carolina, he was 6'4". You're not supposed to be that big in there anyway, because you hit, you come down pretty hard. But he adopted me as his little buddy. They used to call us Mutton Jeff. And nobody touched me, boy, because he was tough. And I got chewed out from the captain one day, I suppose, for saying something. And the next day I come off a guard, and the guy come running from the captain's off, and he says, "Harry, come on over, Russia's got the captain on the floor. He's afraid he's going to kill him." I says, "You go back and tell the captain, if he doesn't court-martial me, I'll come over and get him off." He come running back and he says, "Anything you want, anything you want." So I come over and I says, "Hey, buddy, let's go." "Okay, partner." And he gets up and he goes. And next day they transferred him out into transportation. And I come off guard one day and I heard stomp, stomp, stomp up the stairs. We lived in the top apartment. I think it was Ritter Apartments. And I opened the door and here he was. I said, "Rush, what are you doing here?" "Oh, partner," he says, "I knew you were here," and he says, "I had to stop and see you." I says, "Aren't you in a convoy?" "Yes." "Oh, I'll catch him." I said, "You get court-martialed." "Oh, I'll catch him."
Now, during the time that you were overseas, were you getting letters back and forth, or
yes.
were you able to communicate?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I got letters. He wrote me almost every day. But when he went overseas, see, he finished training for the paratroopers at, well, around the end of November. So he got to come home for Christmas before he went overseas.
And this was Christmas of
44?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he went overseas in January when he got back from his vacation. And what did I say?
So you were writing letters every day to home mm-hmm. to your...
Well, yeah, and then when he went overseas, there was about a month that I didn't get a letter while he was, moving.
And were you getting letters from her regularly? Mm-hmm. The mail service was good?
The mail service was very good.
Mail service is great.
Were these the V letters, the ones that were written on this flimsy little paper during the war?
That's what I was sending right
No.
there.
No, but they had to be, they were checked. You know,
censored.
His letters were read.
Yeah,
they had to be censored.
Yeah.
And all he could say is, "I'm over in Europe."
"I miss you."
How was the food while you were over there?
Well, if you like cold hash, it was pretty good. But food is good, except, when they always give you a C ration. Once in a while, they come out with a K ration. And those are really good. There are boxes of stuff, and chicken and everything. But they said they had other thing in C ration, but the only thing I ever saw was cold hash.
And
they never heated it. It was always cold hand, cold can.
Was that a Thanksgiving, or no, you were not, that you had, were supposed to have turkey? And it was rot. It was, they cooked it, but it was rotten.
Yes.
They couldn't eat it, so they
walked in the kitchen and the kitchen stunk.
Okay, well.
Well, I was glad to get out, glad I served. Because they should give me a chance to go back to school, and the best thing I did is that I went back and got my degree.
He almost didn't go back. Because we didn't figure we could afford it, and so when my brother-in-law passed away. My other brother-in-law, he wasn't married to my sister at that time, but he was going with her, and he was going to school mines in Rapid City. So he said that, he said, Harry, you got to go to school, get out of the mine. So he made an appointment for him to see the registrar at the school. Well, we didn't know the GI Bill was running out. This was June. We didn't know the GI Bill was running out in July. It was ending. So when he went down to talk to the registrar, he said, you have to go to school, regardless.
So as long as you started school before July, then you could take advantage of the GI Bill during the entire
school.
And school
didn't
experience.
Start there until September.
Yeah.
So he had to go over to Spearfish and
go to summer school
yeah.
in order to get under the GI Bill.
But I went to work in a homestead mine. It was $5.32 a day. And then they put you in a 16-car place where you load 16 ton with a scoop shovel. They give you $5.40 a day. Then when we went contract, we made $30, $40 a day. And we drove raises 150 feet from level to level. And then when I went back to school, the company told me, he says, Harry, come on up and put your diggers on and come to work. No matter what shift it is, just come up, we'll put you to work. So they were good. You know, I could come up and work.
So he worked on Friday and
she'd
Saturday
be doing my
night.
Homework.
Yeah.
I'd come home and she'd show me how to do it.
Yeah.
So she got the education.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that was only that 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So looking back on your service experience then, what are your thoughts about?
It wasn't bad at all. It was, I was in good shape. I can't believe I weighed 179 pounds. It was all muscle. And,
because of the physical training? In,
yeah.
Which was more extensive for paratroopers than for infantry.
Yeah.
8 hours a day of calisthenics.
Well, that first week, they wiped over half of them out. And I was in good shape. I just come out of 17 weeks of basic infantry. A lot of these guys just, you know, come from an office job and this and that.
Well, and you'd been working in a mine before that, so that's pretty physically demanding.
And when I went in the morning, toward the end of the week, to get out of bed, I had to put my hand behind my head like this. That was tough. I could see those guys. And they had no pity on you. You know, you either done it or...
Back to the infantry, huh?
Back to KP.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess that pretty well winds it up. Unless you have any final thoughts, either one of you?
Fine.
We were blessed.
Yeah, good thing going to service.
Well, on behalf of the Veterans History Project and OASIS, we want to thank you for this interview and thank you for your service to the country, which was just an amazing thing and a wonderful thing for you to do.
You know, the funny part was when I got transferred to Washington, D.C., our second son just got out of high school, and I was that president of Kennedy. He come out and he'd go to college and high school and picking good kids. Our son was selected to go to law school. And after he finished law school, he had to go to work for the government. So I was in the Department of Interior and we got transferred into the Department of Labor. And I was in Washington, D.C., assistant to the director. And we got transferred into labor. My son came in. He was my boss. He was working for my boss. He was assistant to my boss. And you should have seen everybody. They didn't know. What do we do here? Can't have this.
Nepotism.
Yeah. And then they said, well, he didn't ask for it. He didn't ask for it. So forget it.
Yeah.
And nobody knew how to approach it.
That's wonderful. Wonderful story. Well, again, thank you very, very much.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll end the interview with that.
Okay, well, thank you.